This is KBNF Regional News for Wednesday, April 16th. I'm Patricia Naft. Lawmakers at the state capitol have some big-ticket items to iron out before the session wraps up in May. Benta Berkland talks to State House reporters about some of those measures as part of our Capitol Conversation series.
Joining us, we have Ivan Moreno with the Associated Press and Charles Ashby with the Grand Junction Daily Sentinel. We're reaching the final stretch of the end of the legislative session. We're about three-fourths of the way through. Ivan, give us an overview of things that are still pending.
They still have to take final votes on the budget. There's a couple of bills regarding education. One is the annual School Finance Act, which appropriates funding for public schools. And then there's a separate bill called the Student Success Act that seeks to implement some of the reforms that were tied to the $1 billion tax increase that failed in November. And lawmakers are still trying to figure out what to do with all of the pot revenue that's coming in and how they'll be able to spend it and basically what would be the plan with that going forward.
And Charles, specifically with the education package Ivan just mentioned, it seems like lawmakers have really scaled back some of their visions for that when they're hearing from school districts that they don't want more mandates from the legislature when they've had a lot of budget cuts over the years.
Well, this is where the politics comes into play. Right now, because of the recession, they've had to cut education, K-12 education, by about $1 billion, I think, over the last 4 or 5 years. And so there's this thing they call the negative factor, which is where they were able to find a way to cut K-12 education in the recession. And so now the school districts around the state are wanting to have that money back based on Colorado law, different interpretations of what Colorado law is. Democrats started out with the $80 million you're going to put back to that. Then that went up to $100 million, and now it's at $110 million. But the Republicans are somewhat using it as a political tool to say, oh, we're the big education people, and we want more to pay back that negative factor. And so there's arguments back and forth and accusations of using it for politics on both sides of the aisle.
What's really surprising here is that what Charles was mentioning about both parties playing politics with this issue, because that never happens here. This is actually the first year that that has actually happened, so that's kind of been a surprise.
And I know lawmakers on the budget committee talking about the pot revenues, they expect, you know, whether it's politics or just differing priorities, that's going to be a heated debate. It's about $20 million, which doesn't sound like a lot when you look at the overall state budget, but there's going to be a lot of people who want that money for various things within the purview of marijuana.
What they're trying to figure out now is really trying to get a good estimate of how much tax revenue is going to come in, because it's been kind of a moving target. And they're also trying to figure out how much money they could actually spend. What they're trying to look at is waiting a year after the revenue actually comes in so that they're actually spending the money that they have, sort of like how they do with gambling taxes.
Yeah, on the pot money, I mean, the governor's already laid down his plan for how that money should go. And because of complicated budget stuff that's too long for radio listeners to even care about, much less us, it's become kind of a cluster. Nobody thought about it when they had the amendment on the ballot last year to impose the taxes to make them Tabor exempt. And so partly what's happening is that it's going to come up against what is called a Tabor cap. And so the fear is that some of the money will have to be put back to the taxpayers, which kind of defeats the purpose of, you know, having the tax in the first place, to pay for the impacts of marijuana.
The Joint Budget Committee will introduce a bill that kind of outlines how this money should be spent. So we'll get a clearer picture fairly soon of what's going to happen with this new revenue.
Thanks. That was Ivan Moreno with the Associated Press, Charles Ashby with the Grand Junction Daily Sentinel. I'm Benta Berkland, and this is Capitol Conversation.
Spring frosts and cold nights are a fact of life for fruit growers in western Colorado. After the cold snap earlier this week, orchard managers are checking their trees to try and see how much of their crop is lost. Bob Hammond of the Colorado State University Extension Agent for Grand Junction told KVNF's Emily Guerin that it's too soon to tell.
Well, I looked at my apricots last night, and you carefully take the flowers apart and dig in there and look at the ovary, which is the part of the flower that makes the fruit, and if it's soft and mushy, and it's obvious it's been frozen, but if it still looks good and solid, it has the potential to make a fruit, but it can take a couple days for it to deteriorate.
At what point in the spring are orchard trees most vulnerable to frost and cold weather?
Trees are most vulnerable during bloom, And unfortunately, at least in Palisade, when this frost hit night before last, we were in full bloom on at least the early and mid-season peach varieties.
Are there some crops that are likely to be more affected by this cold weather than others?
The early and mid-season peaches on some sites are more vulnerable, and site is incredibly important. Two properties side by side, one of them with not as good air drainage, might have got hurt pretty bad, and the one right next door that had better air drainage and possibly some frost protection might not be hurt at all. So it is very difficult to generalize over a large area.
So we're up in the North Fork Valley, and for those of us here, it seems like the apricots are always what's most affected, and we pretty rarely have a good apricot crop. Why is that?
Well, apricots are the earliest blooming fruit, and so they're susceptible for a lot longer time period. An apricot will get frozen out, while a peach or nectarine right next door will just be in bud stage and can tolerate cold a lot better. Cherries are pretty early. They're just a little behind apricots in flowering time, so they probably got nailed pretty good in some spots by this frost. Pears were starting bloom, and they could have been frozen out, but apples are the latest bloomers, and they're probably going to be least affected of all the crops.
Can orchard managers lose up to a certain percent of their crops and still be okay, or is any loss pretty significant?
Yeah, you can afford to lose a fair percentage of the flowers out in there and still get a full crop. The rule of thumb in a crop like peaches is 10% of the bloom in there can make a full crop, because if every bloom makes a fruit, there's a lot of thinning that goes on. So you get large quality fruit instead of a bunch of little small fruit.
Have you noticed any climactic trends over the years?
There's always been frost issues, and consistent fruiting reliability is a major issue that fruit growers face. And that's why small fruit growers who can't afford frost protection can have a much more difficult time than a large fruit grower who can afford a wind machine. Wind machines are really good for frost protection when there's inversion. That means there's a cold layer of air on the ground, and you go up higher and the air gets warmer, and under the right conditions, you turn on the wind machine and it creates a wind which mixes the cold and the warm air, and can bring the temperature up in the orchard floor by 3 or 4 or 5 degrees. And that's all you need a lot of time to protect against frost.
So it sounds like it's still too soon to tell what the fruit crop is going to be like this summer and fall.
There will be cherries somewhere, but there's no telling where it is at this point.
That was KVNF's Emily Guerin. Stay tuned for the Wednesday Morning Music Mix with Jeff Reynolds. For KVNF News, I'm Patricia Neff.